1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And yesterday you would have heard on the programme from Father Donald Roach, who wasn't officiating at the first funeral of the three young men who tragically died, Graham Taylor, Carl Freeman and Dean Maguire. And they were buried over the last 4 days in the Talla Jobstown Brookfield area of West Dublin. And Father Donal said it was the most disturbing. He didn't officiate now. He was there to try and regulate the numbers. He said it was the most disturbing liturgy he was ever at. The atmosphere was restless. The priest officiating, he felt, was up against it. He was upset that there was no mention of the taxi driver, the truck driver that was injured when this car came towards him on the wrong side of the dual carriageway on the Nace Road. He asked Gardaí for assistance, and they said if anything had happened, they wouldn't, because the numbers were way over the regulated numbers. And the Gardaí and Talla said if anything happened, they would attend, but otherwise their presence would heighten the situation. And it's been pointed out to us that in February of this year, 2021, there was a funeral in Crumlin of a man who had organised crime gang associations. And there was 200 people in the church, which clearly was breaking regulations. But when the Gardaí were alerted in Crumlin, they didn't say we won't attend because of my heightened situation. Apparently the sergeant or whoever's in charge in Crumlin rounded up as many Gardaí as he could, and they attended the church, and they went up onto the altar. And the celebrant, Father Tom Clough, they asked him to tell the congregation that unless everybody except the immediate family left the church, the funeral mass could not go ahead. And the Gardaí then escorted Father Tom Clough with his agreement into the sacristy. And then a number of people in the congregation took over the altar and made speeches from the altar, but there was no priest officiating. And the Gardaí stood firm, and the funeral did not take place. The funeral did not take place. A Catholic funeral did not take place in that sense. So the Gardaí in Crumlin are to be commended for standing up. But as Father Donal told, you see, by the way, Father Donal in every newspaper today, he's on the front page of the Irish Times, and he's very brave, I think, as well, for speaking out so trenchantly beginning yesterday on this programme. But we also mentioned the rules of the regulations, guidelines laid down by the Catholic Church. This is about these funerals, and you know the details at this stage. The torch and a screwdriver is one of the offerings for someone who was a burglar. A banner, professional banner, unfurled on the altar behind the, in front of the station to the cross, basically said, "Rest in peace, Dean. You know the score. Get on the floor. Give me the money. Don't be funny," which apparently was his call sign when he was breaking into houses. And these were all on the altar. And you heard also some of the eulogies from the altar, and then the display inside and outside the church, including the hearse travelling from O'Dwyer's funeral home in the Liberties on Wednesday night through red lights. We're still trying to find out who was driving it through red lights with the coffin. It's an American style coffin, which is the family's decision, up to the house for a wake. But back in June 2019, not too long ago now, 2 years, Archbishop of Dublin, retired now, Diarmaid Martin, warned against gangland criminals exploiting religious services to enhance their own image.
I lived in Italy. I watched the Mafia for many years. It's a classic thing that these people, when it comes to one of their major people being damaged, that they go for a show funeral. Now, the thing about these show funerals is that the very young people who we want to keep out of this will be attracted by this. Secondly, who pays for a show funeral? It's the same drug money. They shouldn't be using the church for that. I mean, we will provide and do provide religious services for the bereaved, for families who are bereaved, but not to have sort of gatherings of the comrades of these people to be able to show off. Priests, every day, are dealing with families who are bereaved. They know, and they have to say to priests, to people, look, this particular song wouldn't be appropriate at a funeral, and people accept it. If and this will go on with some of the families of those involved in this recent violence. But if they begin to say, no, we want something different, then we can say, well, look, please, that isn't suitable, go somewhere else. If people are insisting on things which go beyond, and not just sort of the sort of solemn arrival of remains in the church, but even sometimes what's being said or done in the church, the entire church would have to say simply, no, this isn't appropriate.
And we contacted the Archbishop's Office, the Diocese of Dublin, the Archdiocese of Dublin, Archbishop's Office, Archbishop Dermot Farrell now, and they basically had no comment to make, and they said they do not comment on individual funerals, but you could not get a clearer statement, I think, on show funerals from Dermot Martin. We asked the same questions yesterday. First of all, God rest three young men. Nobody deserves to die. Where was, and all the descriptions of the three young men, nobody mentioned what they work at, who paid for the funerals, who paid for the American style coffins, which you ring, I think the only undertaker in Ireland or coffin maker that supplies them, they won't tell you the price of them. You have to, has to be done. But that is a pretty trenchant statement from retired Archbishop Dermot Martin. Now, after yesterday's programme, we were contacted by a close relative of Dean Maguire. We have recorded a piece with the relative. We verified that she is a relative. For the purposes of this interview, she would like to be addressed as Anne. So, Anne, you contacted us after yesterday's programme. You remember the family.
I rang in to Dean Maguire, and I'd like to say Dean Maguire comes from a very well-respected family and has a lovely wife and two children.
Anne, just tell us a bit about Dean. What age was he?
He was 29.
And when you say you knew he was involved in crime, and he's from a respectable family, what went wrong?
Yes, of course. Well, we don't know, do we, really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things go wrong for every family.
Yeah.
You know, as I say, there's no saints amongst any of us. The way the media is condemning him, and there was no such thing as carry on in the church. I was in the church. And by the way, we all knew that the papers were there in the cameras. And I can assure, if anything was broken, it would have been by a child, a bit of plastic. And I don't know why the priest had been terrified, because the priest that done the funeral knows the family very well. That alone is condemning people that bad. Now, I'm quite well aware of Dean did crime. I'm quite well aware of, but let me tell you one thing. If he done his time for his crime, so I don't know why all of this is going on, making them out to be mass murderers. Like, there's crime in all walks of life, there's crimes in the hierarchy, there's crimes in the government, there's crimes in the guards, there's crime everywhere.
Right. And you say in the church, well, someone used bad language from the altar, you heard that?
Yes, and I did indeed, and it was apologised to the priest.
Okay. And then that banner that was in the church, you know the score, get on the floor,
yes,
don't be funny,
yes,
show me the money. What was,
yes,
that about?
Well, I don't know what that was about. As I say, I wouldn't be well aware of everything that be going out there in the world, because, like, every time you pick up the paper, it's bad news, no good news.
Yeah.
You know, as I say, crime is in every family all over the world, nearly. I'm not saying every family, excuse me for that. But there's crime is widespread.
And then the screwdriver and the torch on the altar and up Fox Rock.
I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you. I think up Fox Rock was just a nickname.
Okay. And why do you think Dean has been treated unfairly? God rest him, by the way, and to you and your family.
Yeah, God rest him is right, because God will address him, because to be judged as soon as to meet the man above, the same way as I'll be judged in every single one of us, the so-called great people out there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I tell you, do you ever, you know, like, okay, he has stood his crime in the time, he's done his time for it.
Mm-hmm. And when did you hear that Dean had been killed?
I heard the next morning.
Oh, God.
And when which is terrible, because he got a terrible death. And I don't care who you are or what you are, nobody deserves a death like that. Where were the guards? You know, that was supposed to be chasing them or following them. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, what is the family's understanding of what happened?
my family's so devastated. They're broken up over this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But we will get to the bottom of it. We really will get to the bottom of it. You know? I mean, like, let's face it. They were killed. They're dead. The three of them, Lord rest their poor souls. Okay, I know people are going to say, complain about this, say that poor souls. Well, people can say what they like because you get fed up listening to what people say. That's, everyone has their own opinion in life. But one thing they do forget is there's only one judge. And every one of our days will come. And every one of us will meet a man above and will be shown everything in life. The good times, the bad times, the good we done and the bad and wrong we done. We all will have to face that. And I'm a good Christian and I'm his auntie and I've been praying. I always pray for all the boys and the girls and the family, including my own children, including every one of my nephews and nieces, their husbands, their wives, their partners. I pray. And you know what? Thank God I do, because I've always prayed for them. And I told the good Lord, I said, Lord, some of them are in trouble. I pray for them. I pray for that their souls will always be saved. What more could I do? What more could the family do? We idolise him. He's our blood.
Yeah.
Blood is thicker than water. I mean, if it was one of your own children, if it happened to be anyone's son and daughter, what can you do? There's people, as you say, Fox Rock. There's people, Fox Rock, Black Rock, all over in all these big colleges. Yes, when a lot of them get into trouble, you never see all the media giving out or complaining about it, because most of the money be handed across the counter for it to be washed away. What makes me sick in this country, what about the children, the paedophiles that's out there, that get slapped in the wrist and go into their cells for 6 months and come out and do it? What about all those that have committed terrible things to young children?
And did you know Carl Freeman and Graham Taylor? Did you know his pals?
No, I did not. I did not.
Okay.
I wouldn't have talked to my nephew in a long time. We're not the type of family that goes knocking on your
door.
Yeah,
I understand that,
how you do. But we're very close, blood-wise. Blood is thicker than water. And he's our family, and through death, to repart. That's the way we look at it.
And how is his mother? How is his mother and father?
My brother and his wife, they worked all their life. They have worked all their life, and they've kept their children everything they could ever need, especially all the love in the world.
Yeah.
They couldn't have asked for better families. But the mother and father can't be responsible for any of us can't be responsible for our children. Go out. Once they cross the door, we can't be responsible for what they do. And the reason I knew Dean had a criminal record is because when he goes to prison.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't say that I knew every time they went out the door that what they were going to do. We're not the type of family to sit back and say, if we've seen somebody, like, we wouldn't want to see anybody getting hurt. Nobody get hurt. That wouldn't be in our blood to see somebody wanting to be hurt or go through suffering or pain. Because we know what suffering is like. We know what pain is like. You know?
And at the funeral, were you down in the house for the wake on Wednesday and Thursday?
I was in my brother's house, yes, I was.
Okay, and there's loads of videos up. I don't know whether you've seen them, of the hearse being driven at speed up to...
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, okay. And where you...
Do you ever wonder sometimes where you drove... Are you being driven to do these mad things at times? Who drives them to do this?
Well, do you think Dean was driven to do mad things?
Maybe. I'm not saying nothing about that, but maybe.
And I see that Dean lost a brother as well, Thomas.
He did indeed.
And what age was Thomas?
Fall on his head.
Oh.
23 years of age.
Oh my God.
He fell and hit his head. He had an Isaram. Yes, that's correct.
Oh God.
Yes. That's two of them. And who wants to see anything like that happening? Because I tell you one thing, you'd really want to have an evil streak in you to see that. It's the parents. It's the families that suffer over all this.
As I said yesterday, three young men who didn't deserve to die.
Of course they didn't deserve to die.
But of course not.
Do you understand? Like, I'm not saying that you don't deserve to go to prison. I wouldn't say anything like that. Of course, you do the crime, you do your time. End of the story. That's simple.
But burglary is an awful crime, man.
Exactly. We wouldn't have been aware of burglaries or anything really like that. Knew he'd get into trouble. I'm not saying burglaries is right.
But he wasn't. He wasn't. He was in prison for burglaries.
Well, I wouldn't have known all about everything. You know, I'm not saying. Look, don't get me wrong here.
Hmm.
As I said to you, whatever crime anyone does, they go to prison. If they're caught, they go to prison to do their times. But there's worse out there. There's paedophiles.
Yeah, I know that, Anne. But see, as you well, as you well know, Anne, and I well know. I don't know where you're from originally, Anne. But like anyone that's burgled, even if they only get the gas meter back in the day, but the effect on the person that's burgled is terrible.
I understand that. I'd be quite well aware.
And someone going to prison doesn't get rid of that trauma for people.
I understand that, but where did you go then?
And we
the young generation don't think the way we think.
What do you? Dean was obviously idolised by a lot of people, including his family, obviously. But he was idolised by a lot of other young people.
Of course, he would have been. I wouldn't have known them.
But did they glorify criminality? That's the point. Would this is the worry, Anne. It's the worry for you and it's the worry for everybody with children.
Exactly. I understand what you're saying, but no, I wouldn't think so. Not about glorifying because they were all gone to the funeral and they had motorbikes.
And
that doesn't say anything about glorifying criminal. That doesn't say anything about that.
When they see lads with money and Rolex watches and fast cars and holidays in the Middle East.
Well, I don't know anything about Rolex watches or Far East or this East or that East. Like, I'm not concerned about where anyone else is, if you understand. I'm not a person that wants to go out there and nose into other people's business. I do not care what goes on behind anyone else's business. What people do is their business. What we do is their business. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm not one of these persons that goes out and looks at a young lad and wants to know, or a young girl, and say, oh, look at them, look at this, look at that. That I'm not here to judge anyone, because I'd be a hypocrite if I did.
Yeah,
I do not judge people. I go into the church, as I said, and I pray. I'm not one of them that goes into the church, just gets on my hands and knees, and says a few prayers, and comes out and condemns the next door neighbour. I don't agree with that. That's not in me. Sorry. Really and truly, that's not there for me. I do not believe in scandal or scandalising people. I really don't. And the family will be the same. I couldn't afford to judge.
I understand that. And that's
the bank robber next door, or the bank robber down in the west of Ireland, or up in the north, or the far east. I wouldn't be judging anyone.
And do you think...
Because none of us can judge anyone.
I understand
this
that.
This is what I'm trying to say. We're all going to be judged by the one judge. And there is only one judge. Apart from the judges in the court, but they know... The man above is higher than every one of them. Mm. And this is what gets to me. A lot of people in this country seem to think that they're very important when they have when they're up there in a high job. Do you really think they're very important?
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as ABC, you know? Do you really
do? But Anne, the point I'm making is, on this earth and in this life, and I said it yesterday on the programme, how do we convince young people? Like you say, Dean, which I totally believe in what you say, well-reared, lovely family, and then whatever went wrong. But how do we persuade young people that that is not a way of life that's worth living? Breaking into people's homes.
I'm well aware of it. Yeah, I understand that. I really
understand that. So what would you say to young people who are saying that's a way of making money?
Hold on, do you know what I really think happens to the poor kids out there?
Mm.
Most kids, if you go for a job, right, if they're at the going into prison, and you come out looking for a job, once you have a record, it doesn't matter if it's for a bottle of milk, a box of matches, a pack of cigarettes, give a criminal record.
Mm.
Why did you give them a criminal record straight? Why don't you rehabilitate these kids? Why isn't there jobs out there for them?
Okay, so try
and use the confidence. The confidence has gone out of the kids.
So try and get it at an early age.
Yeah, because what happens is the judgment that's put on the people out there.
So are the family...
Kids, there's no child a bad child. No kid is a bad kid.
Isn't, and there's maybe no baby born. Older, yeah, you're right.
Maybe when we get older... Which is true in each and every one of us. There's the good side of us, but also the bad side of us. But they're all judged at an early age when they get involved. Once those children receive a record. They come out. I saw it with a lot of young lads, lovely kids, couldn't have met nicer kids, and yet they would be condemned.
Are Kathleen and Thomas, your brother and your sister-in-law, are they looking for an inquiry? What happened that night? What happened there, Dean?
Well, I don't know about that at the moment. Like, they're too devastated to talk about. And you know, they're too devastated, you know. Mm. But I'm sure there has to be a big inquiry into the whole lot of it. Like, you have to understand that that's his mother and father.
I understand
that,
yeah.
He has brothers and sisters. He has children. He has a wife. Family-in-law, you know, we're all devastated.
Yeah, I understand that.
And now, when I say we're all, you know what I mean? See, we're all broken-hearted, we're devastated, we're torn apart. That's true out of one family. But at the same time, you can't explain that to certain people in the media, because the first thing they want to hear is they want to hear you saying that. Then they get on and they try to get at you like a tiger. What about the people that they devastated?
Who do you mean, the tiger?
They've done the time for the crime. Let the dead rest. It's history now, you know. What has taken place is history. You know, the family are in grieving, the family are in pain. They don't need to listen to any more. Let the dead rest. Like, this is going on, you know, like this has been going on since 2 weeks nearly, this accident.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's something each day.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's the media going on and on and on and on and on. And the same people think that they're gods. They really do, you know.
Mm.
These young lads, whatever crime they've done, whatever time they've done, I don't know. I don't know. But look, they're gone now and there's nothing bringing them back. So I think they should be allowed to rest in peace and meet their judge maker. They're going to be judged. It doesn't take the media to go out and judge people. At the end of the day, there's a lot of children out there dying, including that poor little boy who was killed on his way home from the match.
Yeah, you know, man, God rest him. Yeah.
You know, like, we've all heard, it doesn't make any difference. People seem to think that people like them young boys had no heart. I can assure you, they probably had bigger hearts than the whole lot of the media out there. Just because somebody does something like that doesn't say that you haven't got that there's no goodness there. They're condemned to be bad all the time, condemned to be bad and ruthless all the time. And this is the sad thing about life. You know?
And what is it? Did you know there was a screwdriver and a torch in the offertory procession?
I did.
And what did you think it was for?
To be truthful, which I didn't think at all.
Okay.
I just seen them.
And when
what would you be thinking about?
Okay,
anything like that?
And when you saw the banner on the altar, R.I.P. Dean, Dean, you know the score, get on the floor, don't be funny, show me the money.
Yeah.
What did you think that was about?
I did see it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you think it was about robbing?
I thought it was a slang with them.
About robbing?
Well, I wouldn't say all about Robin either.
What was it about?
I couldn't really tell you what it was about. I did see it, but I couldn't really tell you what it was about.
Understand.
I'm getting on in my life. I understand that.
But as you say, you're, which is coming across, you're a very good Christian and a Catholic, and you don't judge people. But
no, I don't, because I can't. None of us can. Because I'd be afraid of my life for what I'd be judged on when I meet the man above.
Yeah, okay. But was there anything at
the day or the hour?
Okay, apart from the horror of the grief of the young man. But was there anything at the funeral that made you uncomfortable?
No. Why would I be uncomfortable? Why would I be uncomfortable?
A screwdriver, a torch, up Fox Rock.
Yeah,
you know the score, get on the floor, don't be funny, show me the money.
Why would I be uncomfortable? I'm getting on in life. I'm an L1, like, compared to the young generation today.
Yeah.
I wouldn't understand an awful lot of that. I mean, okay, they're making this big thing out about a torch.
So well, between the three of them, they had over 300 convictions.
So they say.
Well, it's not so they say. It's on the record. They got their day in court. They got their free legal aid. They were well represented. And they still had 300 convictions.
Well, so do you say. As I say, so do you say. I've seen that. No, but I've seen, this is what I'm trying to say to you. I wasn't in the court. I don't know what, and I don't see fives in the court. I'm saying this is what I've seen in the paper. I read that in the paper. I understand what you're saying. That's what I'm trying to get across to you. I understand what you're saying. I saw that article in the paper. You know? But the papers, I'm not saying they're not right. But
no, I'm not talking, I'm not talking about the papers, Anne. I'm talking about the public record. The lads were taken to court, the case was heard, the judge made the decision, and between the three of them, they had over 300 convictions, most of them for burglary.
Well, I didn't hear that. I just seen something in the paper.
Yeah.
But, like, as what I'm trying to say to you, I'm not saying that that's not true. I'm not saying that like that. I'm not trying to make out that you are saints and you are innocent. I'm not trying to make out like that. Don't get me wrong. I know, obviously, from the papers, they've committed the crimes. As I say, they've done their times. They're gone now.
But if you met someone, you see, apparently they operate around Fox Rock a lot. But one of the problems,
I don't know.
I know, I'm only. But it was, have you known people who were burgled, Anne?
Yeah.
You do, okay, so do I, my own mother, etc.
Well, God bless her.
And they're often burgled by people who live locally.
I don't know about that.
So how do we stop young people getting involved in crime?
As I said to you, if they do a small crime, a big crime, it makes no difference in the crime. I'm not judging people on their crime. But I can assure you, they get a record. They go into prison, they come out. It builds up.
That's your point.
Yeah, and they look for a job. Hold on. This is very fine for people up there in the top knobs who have good jobs. That's fair play. Educate people, that's great. Fair play is fair play. But as soon as they come out, I've seen it. I know all about it. I've seen it. I wouldn't know all about my nephew because, as I say, I wouldn't be knocking on the door. We're not a family that knocks on each door 24/7.
Yeah.
Do you understand? But we're blood. Okay. We are blood. And blood is thicker
than water. And his daughters are very young. Auntie Catrice and Margaret, they're very young.
Yeah, beautiful little children.
But I hope they understand what's happened to their daddy.
Well, you know yourself, would children really understand?
I don't think so, no.
But at the end of the day, to grow up without a daddy.
And his wife, Sally Ann, as well.
She's a lovely girl. She used to grow up now, you know, married two children.
Yeah.
You know, the children have to grow up. And like you, like me, like every one of us, when it doesn't matter who your mother is, where she's from, what she's done, if she abandoned you yet and walked out and left you years ago, your mother's your mother.
Yeah.
Your father's your father.
Okay, well, Anne, as I said yesterday, condolences to the family. Nobody deserves to die.
Not at all. Okay. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. I wouldn't like to see any mother or any father. Our family, myself, and at the end of the day, I'm sure your family too. I don't know whether you have or not.
I have.
But at the end of the day, the worst nightmare for any parent or any wife or any children is to lose the mother or father or lose your son or your daughter.
Okay. And auntie of Dean Maguire and sister of Dean's father, Thomas, thanks again. Thanks, Anne. Mind yourself. And it's 1857-15815, joe at rt.ie and 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And it's Joe at rt.ie, 1850-715-815. George Brophy is an undertaker in Kerry and he wants to point out, which again, it's unusual. I don't know. Maybe George, is it? Have you ever seen an undertaker in a church wearing aviator sunglasses with a gold chain hanging out of them, a trilby hat and officiate or participating in the obsequies? Is that allowed? Is George allowed? Can you speak aloud? Can you hear me, George? No, I can't. Okay. Is Anne there? Anne, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Joe.
You contacted us because we won't name the cemetery, but it's a very distressing situation, Anne. And it's the grave beside a relative of yours.
Yeah. My own mum passed away almost 3 years ago. And shortly after that, a youngish gentleman passed away.
Okay.
And erected on this gentleman's grave on a pedestal is a marble firearm.
A gun. A pistol.
Yes, in a pistol, and it is made of marble, and it sits on a marble pedestal, aiming up towards all the graves, aiming towards my mum's grave and every other grave in that row. There are deck chairs left at the grave. There are drinking sessions that take place at this gentleman's grave. And when I enter the graveyard and I see the party taking place, the groups of people down drinking, I leave the graveyard and do not attend my mum's grave. Mm-hmm. I've spoken to many people whose graves are in that area, and they are also very uncomfortable with this large pistol on the pedestal.
And what does the gun, what does the pistol, what is it? I'm not being stupid. What does it represent? Was he a member of a pistol shooting? Did he represent Ireland in the Olympics in pistol shooting or something? Because it can be legitimate.
Yeah, it could be. I have no idea.
Is there any reference to that on the?
No, not at all. Not at all.
And is the main thing, is there any religious iconography on the grave?
There is, yes. And there would be a picture of this young gentleman inserted in onto the headstone.
Okay. Well, again, another young man.
Yeah.
And you know how he died, Anne?
I have no idea how he died. No. And I suppose I make it my business to not look at the grave.
Yeah.
Because now all I see is this big pistol, and I find it upsetting. I think graveyards are a community shared space.
Good point, yeah.
Where
very
we
good point.
All ought to have respect for every grave, not just my own mother's grave, but everybody else who is buried in the cemetery. And erecting.
And have you ever,
like
you see, in fairness, there could be an innocent explanation of the gun, the pistol on the grave.
There could be. Leaving sun chairs propped up against the grave for whoever decides to turn up to sit around and drink is equally not appropriate.
Yeah.
You don't see that at any other grave. It's a complete lack of respect within a community shared space for the dead.
Now, can I ask you something, Anne? And this is in light of what Archbishop Dermot Martin said earlier. We played a clip on the programme about who's paying for all of this.
Yeah.
Does it look like it's an because grave and headstones and coffins and funerals are expensive at the best of times, especially in Ireland. Does it look as if it's expensive?
Yes, absolutely. It would be quite a large marble erection within the graveyard.
Yeah. Now it's striking. Now it's
very large. It stands out.
Okay.
And I will say, several years ago, when my mum was in her 80s, her home was broken into when she was in the house alone. And she had no idea that the break-in had taken place until she went to go to bed. She had been sitting in the kitchen watching the television. She has poor hearing.
Okay.
And when she went to go to bed, she found her bedroom had been turned upside down.
Oh,
her sitting room, all the presses had been broken open. All her jewellery had been taken. And all I could be grateful for was the fact that they didn't go into her in the kitchen. They didn't harm her. But the psychological effects of that on her were absolutely awful. She was terrified in her own home until she passed away. She was very frightened.
I know, but
we had to put new locks, chains on doors.
Yeah.
She was afraid in her own home.
Okay, Anne, thanks indeed. Thanks indeed, Anne.
Okay,
and
thanks,
you may just stay listening, Anne, if you can, about about the trauma of burglary.
Yeah, Maria, absolutely.
Maria is in Fox Rock in Dublin, that area that was mentioned from the altar on a number of occasions and in a number of the chants around Dean Maguire's funeral. That was up Fox Rock. And Anne, who is the aunt of Dean Maguire, said she thinks that might have been his nickname. Maria, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What happened in your case, Maria?
I'm really annoyed over the fact that the lady on the phone, I know we all wear our children and nobody, you know, wears them to do things like that, you know.
Yeah.
But I just think it was total disrespect that she didn't know what the screwdriver was for. I mean, my house was robbed at 3 in the morning. My husband was away. I had my two children in the bed with me. He actually came into the bedroom. I could hear him. He was on the garage trying to get into the garage window. I could actually hear him prising his way in, right? And I rang 999.
With a screwdriver?
Yeah, he had a screwdriver in his hand. When he entered my bedroom, he had a screwdriver in his hand. Do you know, it took 2 years for me, living in my home, to feel safe. And when my husband was doing a course as well at the time, when he used to go and do his course two nights a week, I locked myself in my sitting room with my two children until he came home. I was terrified. And not only was I terrified, my girls were terrified because they knew, now lucky enough they slept through it, but they knew something was after happening in their home.
Right.
I mean, all our sense of being safe in your home was gone out the window. It took me at least 2 years to get over the fact. And the fact, too, that he had a screwdriver in his hand. Now, I was fortunate enough that he didn't do anything to me, you know, I was exceptionally lucky. But the fact was, he took my sense of being safe in my own home.
And did he get into your house?
He was on the garage, and obviously I have a window on the garage that leads onto the landing.
Of course.
And he got in. He actually walked into the bedroom. Because when the police rang me back, they said, well, is he in? And I said, I don't know where he is. I said, but he's in the house, I said, and I don't know where he is. I said, he's after coming into the bedroom. And he walked out. Now, obviously, he got back out because he had heard me. And then when the police came, you know, I couldn't get out of the bed to walk down the stairs. The police had, because I didn't know if he was where he was. And the police had to go round the house to make sure that he wasn't there for me to feel safe. And my brother had to come over and sleep with me that night. My husband then had to come home from the States. I mean, I didn't have an alarm, unfortunately enough, but you know, I had one the next day put in as an emergency.
And was your man with the screwdriver, was he ever caught?
Not as far as I know, he wasn't. Because when the guards came down and they came back down the next morning to take fingerprints and stuff, they know who they are. They said, oh, Joe Soap, whatever, is out. Do you know what I mean? Like, but they can't do anything about it. The first thing the guard said to me was, oh, God, you haven't got an alarm. You know, I mean,
well, even if you had an alarm, you're in bed in your own house.
In my own home, exactly. I was lying awake in the bed, and I kept saying, please, if he comes in, pretend you're asleep. But I was so shocked that I couldn't even close my eyes. And when he came in, all I could do was
And did he say anything to you, Maria, when he came in?
He never, I have to say, he never passed a word, and he walked back out of the bedroom. But the fact was, he actually came into the bedroom.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it was just...
And had he a mask on her?
No. And you know what? To this day, I still can't remember him. I still can't.
Yeah.
I couldn't even tell you who he was.
Could you remember what age he was?
Oh, I'd say he was about 25, 26.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just... You know, I'm shocked. You know, and I'm shocked at the fact that they actually brought up a torch and a screwdriver to the church. And I know he probably comes from a lovely family, and I think that's great. But somebody knew they were going to carry up that. You know, how many people out here that's after being robbed that brings back bad memories.
I know. And do you know many other people in Fox Rock have been burgled?
Oh, quite a few, actually. There was one on my road just there recently at 6 o'clock in the evening, and they pushed in the hall door and robbed the house. Another night at 7 last year, or it was about 2 years ago, an American couple, and the poor woman was sitting in her kitchen, and whoever it was pushed in the door, went in and grabbed their bag and stuff and ran back out again. I mean, we don't feel safe in our own homes. I mean, you know, it's just all types are all, you know, hours of the day. You know, we're careful. When I'm in my house on my own, I have my porch locked. And when I open the door, I can see. And sometimes in the winter, when you have on board gas going around, or electricity, or somebody going around wanting you to sign up, or things, you know, at 5 o'clock in the evening when it's dark, you're telling them to get away from the door. You're not opening the door to them.
Yeah, of course. Anne-Marie, you see, people have, which is, I find particularly objectionable, and that none of us should ever be judged on the place where we were born. We've no hand act or part in it.
Not at all. You can come from our parents. Exactly. World, anywhere in Ireland, anywhere in Dublin, doesn't matter where you're from, there's good and bad everywhere. Good and bad everywhere. And I know certain areas get bad names, you know. Mm. But my thing was that screwdriver and torch was brought up as a gift.
Yeah.
You know, where people are bringing up gifts.
It's to represent your life.
It is to represent
the life
your
of
life,
the deceased.
You know,
yeah.
and what you do.
And I ask, and I don't, up, I still cannot, rock, I still cannot find out what these.
I mean, I thought that was the strength. I mean, come off it, why would they mention Fox Rock if it wasn't? You know,
and I mentioned,
appalling.
I tried to find out what the three men deceased walked at. And I can't. It's not mentioned anywhere. That's why I asked, had the screwdriver and the torch anything to do with his... Like, was he a carpenter or plumber or...
Fitter, whatever. I don't know what he was. But the fact was, that was brought up. You know, whether we like it or whether we don't. And, you know, the family may not like the fact that, you know, what he did, and it was very, very wrong... You know, and I mean, they didn't bring the chap up to do what he did
do. Yeah, of course.
You know, and I can understand, their grieving. But how many people are grieving in their own homes?
Yeah.
That's after being robbed, that just feel inferior all the time.
And it goes
they
on.
They just don't feel safe in their own homes.
And it goes on longer than a prison sentence.
It goes on for years.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, for 2 years I locked myself in my sitting room while my husband was out.
Okay, Maria, thanks indeed for that insight, Maria. Really appreciate it. And kind regards to you and your two daughters and your husband. That's Maria in Fox Rock in Dublin. joe@rte.ie, 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And joe@rte.ie. George Brophy is an undertaker in Kerry. George, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for making the call. Explain, you're an undertaker, what you found, and it's not illegal, but what you found unusual about the behaviour of the undertaker, O'Dwyer and Sons, at this funeral.
Joe, it astonishes me. I believe there was a gentleman there with a bowler hat and dark glasses. Is that true?
A trilby, yes.
My good God almighty, Joe. That is totally disrespectful to the family and the church.
Inside the church?
Inside the church, Joe. Joe, we have done, over the years, we have done military funerals. Their uniform is hats. It's what it's a part of. They show respect. They remove these items before they go to any church. It's totally disrespectful.
Well, is there any regulation of undertakers?
There is an undertaker's organisation, yes, association. But it's not really regulations as against how you perform.
Well, have you ever seen, in all the years you've been in the business, have you ever seen an undertaker in a church wearing American aviator sunglasses with a gold chain hanging out of them and a trilby hat?
No, Joe. And if a person was wearing dark glasses through prescription or something, fair enough.
That's a good point, yeah.
But other than that, no way, Joe. Not a hope. And another thing, Joe, there, at the offertory there, Joe, I was astounded. Because when we do funerals, when we were doing them, we would approach the family, and we would get to know as much as we could about the deceased.
Okay.
What they'd done, what they didn't do, and then the family might want to celebrate their life, give us input. Say if the man was a gardener or the lady was a gardener, a little gardening tool. Well, we would write all this down for the priest, and if we presented to him, and he would call out the actual person that's going to bring this up, so the congregation would get a feeling of this person.
And did you ever come across a situation, George, where the priest would say, no, I don't want a particular item brought up, it's not appropriate?
Not an item, Joe, but particular songs, yes.
Okay. Well, Simply the Best was the one played on Friday, at Friday's funeral, in the church. Tina Turner, You're Simply the Best.
Yeah, the priest would differ on that one, Joe, so which, you know, depending on where you are, what parishes you're in.
Yeah.
You know, they would differ as to what music they like to have played.
Because we had callers this morning saying that priests have intervened in terms of the offertory procession and items to be brought up, and including, the call we got was, including asking the family not to bring up a bottle of vodka. A bottle of alcohol.
Well, you see, this is where the undertaker comes in, Joe, because it's the undertaker's responsibility. Once he picks up the deceased.
So it's the undertaker's
responsibility from there.
So it's the undertaker's responsibility to advise the church of what the offerings will be, advise the celebrants.
Yes, that's where we do the things down here. We would give them, we would actually go and get a book of the prayers of the faithful, present it to the family, whatever prayers you'd like to pick out, and give it the names.
And the other question, George, is a hearse allowed break red lights?
No, Joe, not at all. Joe, as I said, we've done military funerals. The only time we've ever broken lights is that we had Garda escort.
Escort, of course, yeah.
Other than that, not at all, Joe. And Joe, another thing there, that the hearse, the name that's on that hearse is the banner you're flying under.
Yeah.
And that is the banner of respect and decency that you're showing people. You must...
Well, this is a decent, respectable company, or Dwyer & Sons and the Liberties in Dublin.
Why did they allow this to happen?
And we asked them to come on the programme. We asked them to come on numerous times. But unfortunately, they're busy.
Well, Joe, I'll give you a little instance that happened to me some years back. We were involved in an army funeral. Poor chap had deceased abroad.
Yeah.
I had picked up the officer in charge and two of the brothers of the deceased.
Okay.
And on our way to the funeral to pick up the corpse, the two lads had been drinking and they were abusing the officer. So I told them there and then, cut this out. If you don't, you're out on the street.
That's common decency. Fair
play
to you.
They did not. They would not shut up. So I just stopped the car, Joe, and put them out. And the cortege carried on. Whether they were picked up after by one of the family or someone else, Joe, I don't know. And I didn't really care. Because all due respect was to the deceased and the remainder of his family that would carry on as normal and behave themselves.
George, is it unusual? We rang or phoned the cop because on the base of what Archbishop Dermot Martin said, he asked who was paying for these funerals, and we wanted to try and we rang a coffin supplier in Ireland and asked them how much, for example, the Dean, and it's up to every family to decide which coffin they want, but the Dean McGuire coffin was an American style coffin. People know them, very ornate.
Yeah, the casket
things, yeah. And there was a particular name on that one. And we rang the supplier in Ireland and they refused to tell us the price. Is that unusual?
Yeah, Joe, if would be, they're only trying to protect themselves, like, just
against who?
Against who is right, but I mean, they can vary, Joe, to thousands.
Could they, yeah. Okay.
They can go to thousands.
SAP, everyone is entitled, if they're Christian, they're entitled to a Christian funeral.
Yes, indeed, Joe, and everybody's entitled to whatever they like to put their deceased into, you know?
Okay.
Whichever.
Okay, George, thanks for those observations and stay safe. That's George Brophy in Kerry. Mary is in Dublin 9. Mary, good afternoon. Your point, please.
Hello, Joe. The only thing I am outraged is you gave that person a half an hour praising her nephew and that he did no wrong. He was a criminal because he was sent to prison. The list of convictions he had before he ever committed that fatal accident. And it's a terrible thing to say, but they got what they deserved innocent person would have been killed. And not one person mentioned the poor lorry driver that had to see that coming, and he's in hospital, and not one person defended that poor driver.
And in fairness, Father Donald Roach, you might have heard of his statement yesterday on Liveline. He's in most of the papers again today.
Yes.
But he did say he was struck by the fact that the truck driver wasn't mentioned.
That's right. And as regards having respect, they wouldn't be able to spell the word respect. That was the tools of his trade that was brought up onto that coffin. And they knew what was being brought up. And the banner as well, that is another trademark for him. And it's three less on the streets than they are now.
Yeah, but no,
and
Mary, in fairness. I worked as a probation officer for a number of years, and
That was when times were more innocent than what they are now.
Well, criminality was never as glorified as it is now. I take your point. And glorified in the church, but not by the church, but in the church. And the church objected, but they don't seem to be objecting to these three.
The priest was probably afraid. But Mary, one thing
I always knew: if Yumflas, God all of us have choice. Nobody is forced to do anything. If Yumflas got involved in crime, which I savagely disagreed with, especially violent crime and burglary, because I know the trauma it has on individual families, had it on mine. But I always believed that once we could get the Yumflas through their early 20s, you could get them back on the straight and narrow. You could, especially if they got a partner, had a child, they would. And there's so many stories of, and this is what I'm trying to get across yesterday as well. There's so many stories of young men regretting what they did in their early 20s and subsequently going on to have decent lives and rearing decent families. But Archbishop Diarmaid Martin hit it on the head when he said what his worry was, and I said it yesterday, it's the young people that were glorifying and participating in these three funerals, in the applauding a coffin that had ashes in it.
Yeah.
And nothing else.
I know.
And believing that this somehow was a eulogy or an adoration of their friends who are now dead.
Yeah,
the three of them are now dead.
I know.
Leaving five or six children. And they shouldn't be dead. That's my point. They shouldn't be dead.
The thing is that every family, there's a bad apple in every family. Well, thank God I reared five.
But there is redemption. There is.
I've never had an ounce of trouble with any.
Yeah, but there is. But well, you're lucky.
My husband came from seven, Joe, and there was no such thing. What they have is anything. The coffin and all. That's their drugs and violent money that's paying for it. And let them turn around and pay for the funeral. That cortege.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And we're talking still about the funerals of those three young men. I said they were young men, with some of them with children, who were killed in that inferno last week when their car travelling down the wrong side of the motorway hit an oncoming truck. And hopefully that truck driver, as I said yesterday, is recovering. Carl, you think people, probably including myself, have been too hard on the church? We have invited the Archbishop of Dublin onto the programme to talk about the funerals and what Diarmaid Martin called the glorification of these show funerals. But you think there's another issue people are missing, Carl?
Yeah, I don't think the you can expect one or two elderly priests to police a funeral in the sort of circumstances that we had last week. I mean, you made a good point about in the old days people would go to jail and they possibly have some rehabilitation and they come out and they get married, might get a bit of a job. And
you know what the biggest up. You know what the biggest rehabilitator was, Carl? Age.
What? Age. Exactly.
The
yeah,
calendar.
That's right. Yeah. All the evidence is, you're right, once people get into their 30s or 40s, yeah. they don't commit these crimes. But my point is, these men, these young men, would be still alive today. They would be able to meet their kids every weekend or whatever. Their families, who undoubtedly loved them, would be able to visit them if they had got proper prison sentences. I mean, they all had 100 serious convictions. And I mean, by serious conviction, I mean breaking into someone's house, threatening them, driving at high speed the wrong way around streets of Dublin, chased by the Gardaí. I mean, this is reckless behaviour. How come you could do this repeatedly and be out and about? And the people responsible are not the priests, they're not the Gardaí. In fact, they're not the judges. It's the politicians. The politicians need to sort out the prison system, build more places, have proper rehabilitation, dictate to the judiciary the maximum sentences, get rid of this ridiculous...
Yeah, but when Carl Freeman was sentenced in 2017 to 7 years for burglary and attacking that woman, Kathleen Crean, who subsequently died, and she gave a heart-rending victim impact statement about the effect it had on her. He got 7 years in 2017. 7 and 7 is 24. He was out, obviously, because a significant part of the sentence was suspended. And Carl, let's be clear, it's not just the criminals from certain parts of the country. If you look at the situation that emerged in the Independent today, Lindsay Clark and Keith Flynn, two solicitors who featured prominently on this programme over a year ago, they defrauded €400,000. Imagine a bank robbery with 400,000. They defrauded €400,000 from banks and credit unions, as we heard on the programme from one of the people, by buying and tricking homeless people into giving them their PPS number. Now, hang on, my point about that woman, Lindsay Clark, last February was sentenced to 2 years in prison. That would bring you up to next February. Mm. Next February. And her co-accused, co-conspirator Keith Flynn, he got 4 years in prison. And as you know, Lindsay Clark revealed in February last year that she just had a baby and she got 2 years. Lindsay Clark is free. She's out. Mm. She's out. So it doesn't just apply to the white-collar criminal, if they ever get convicted.
I'm not arguing about that. I don't care what crime they do. If they do the crime, they should do the time, not be getting discounted, not be getting...
And why is Lindsay Clark out? Why is she free?
Well, is that the system? Well, maybe it's because she's middle class. Maybe it's because she stood for Fine Gael. You know, I don't know. I mean, we're never told these things. Women seem sometimes to get easier sentences than men. I know this is a big bone of contention in Britain. But leaving all that aside, why do these people get out? I mean,
but I think your overriding point is powerful. That if Carl Freeman, for example, and I'm picking him out there, if he had served the full sentence he got in 2017, he would not be dead.
No, and his family would be able to visit him. Presumably, he'd be learning a trade or learning. You know, I mean, these people, they probably have hidden talents. We often hear that these people, like Manix Flynn, now is a credit to society. He had an awful upbringing. He was sexually abused in Dangan.
And he admits he was involved in incidents, unsavoury incidents, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And he'd be the strongest, as we hear often on this another program, he's the strongest man in condemning crime and especially crimes against a person. Okay, Carl, thanks indeed. David Murphy, sorry for holding you, David. Joe at RT, Daddy, your point, please, David.
Yeah,
you were listening to Dean McGuire's aunt earlier on.
Yeah, I was. I don't know, John, speechless almost. But listen, first of all, I'd like to say condolences to the three families, you know.
Well said, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was a horrific death. And also that truck driver.
Yeah, well said.
You know?
Yeah.
But Joe, you know, to listen to that woman condoning what her nephew, I think it was her nephew.
Yes,
Anne,
her
was
nephew,
it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Joe, it's just inexcusable. It really is, you know? Like, I've been listening the past couple of days, and I'm listening to people who are traumatized by burglaries, break-ins, whatever. You know, like, they're living with this, you know, and Anne said, ah, well, we shouldn't be remembering the past, and it's all about the future and things like that. That's a load of rubbish. These people are living the past day in, day out, you know.
Now, you say you were burgled, but luckily it wasn't traumatic.
It wasn't. It was no big deal, Joe, you know what I mean? It was upsetting at the time.
And was the burglar ever caught?
I don't think so, Joe. Okay. I'm not too sure. But, you know, like, we got away lightly. It certainly wasn't the case of somebody standing over you in your bed or someone like that.
As
you
we
know?
Heard yesterday, somebody standing over him on the bed, and then when he tried to raise his hand in defence, your man stabbed him.
Exactly.
Closer, yeah. Okay.
Horrific. Absolutely horrific. But, Joe, also, you know, that last gentleman there was mentioning about rehabilitation and things. Of course it's never too late.
No, absolutely. You know,
I worked with drug addicts for years and years, and I'm still in contact with some of them who are clean, have jobs, families, houses.
Absolutely, same here. Yeah.
One has even got a doctorate there a couple of years ago.
There is always hope, and that's why if there's... I don't know how you communicate with these young people who are on their scramblers and their Rolex watches and doing whatever, their Jeeps or whatever, for the last 3 or 4 days in these displays. But
Exactly. But it's also that down, is no... Joe, to role models, you know. And I mean, say, if their families are putting up torches and screwdrivers and banners and things, well, what hope have they got? Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
we learn from our parents. We imitate them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay, you know? Okay, David. Thanks indeed. That's David Murphy in Westmeath. Thank you indeed. Joe at rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Josephine, good afternoon. You were burgled as well, unfortunately.
Yes. It's a number of years ago now, but listening to your programme brought it all back to me.
And what happened?
Well, it was my son's 3rd anniversary. My car, obviously, the burglar had come into the back window, which I normally don't leave open, and I certainly don't do now.
Yeah.
And he came into the house, and because of my hard of hearing, that's what really set me off. I was watching the telly because I didn't sleep at the time because my husband and my son had died, and when I went out to follow morning, my car was gone. And my husband had bought me that car 2 months before he died because he always knew I wanted a Volkswagen Beetle. Yeah.
And you say it was your son's 3rd anniversary?
Yeah.
Now, we heard yesterday from the Walsh family up around Kilteel that their grandparents' house was burgled during the obsequies for Damien.
Well, no, my brother came down and he said he was saying the mass in the house.
Okay.
My brother's a priest for his sins. But anyway, what that guy doesn't know, or whomever he was, doesn't know is he tore my whole, the last thing that was left in my life.
Okay.
He tore it apart.
Oh, God.
Because I remember it was Mark's 2nd anniversary, I think it was, and we were in a hotel having a bit of dinner, pretending everything was okay, and they were talking about I needed a car, and I said, oh, this one was, and I said, my wife wouldn't have something like that. She wants a Volkswagen Beetle.
Mm.
And by that Friday, I had a Volkswagen Beetle.
And it was all the trauma, as you say, stayed with you. For years.
I've been speaking about it for years and years.
Okay.
And that man has, I would love to meet him and tell him whatever was left in me, he took it apart.
Oh, God. Okay. Josephine, thanks indeed. That's Josephine in Limerick. Helen in Galway, and there's a queue of people. Helen, good afternoon.
Hiya, Joe. How are you?
Back to the actual funerals.
Yes.
Your point.
Yeah, I think that the priest shouldn't have gone ahead with it at all, Joe. I think that he should have just stopped it.
Well, as I pointed out back in February, remember Father Donald told us yesterday that he phoned the Gardaí. He was in the church and he was getting out of control. He said he felt restless. He might get a belt. And he rang the Gardaí, and the Gardaí said, we're not coming up, it might heighten the situation. And then it was pointed out to us by a significant number of people in the Crumlin area that there was a funeral in Crumlin back in February where there was a same type of arrangement for a figure associated with the Kinahan gang, we're told. And the numbers were far exceeded COVID regulations, as happened on Friday. And the Gardaí didn't run away. They turned up in the church. They went up onto the altar. They marched up onto the altar. They asked the priest to leave the altar, which he did willingly, and they protected him, obviously. And the guard, the sergeant, or whatever, addressed the congregation and said, "This, you are breaking the COVID, stay COVID regulations. Yeah. No funeral until it's sorted out." That was the Gardaí. I don't know if you could let the priest. I don't know if the priest could do it.
My humble opinion down here in the west of Ireland is that the priest should not have gone ahead with it. He genuinely, in my opinion, he should not have gone ahead with it.
Okay.
My God, to accept a screwdriver and a torch and what they represent as gifts.
Okay.
I mean, Jeepers, Joe, you can't condone that. I mean, he did condone.
Well, he did, in fairness. Okay. Helen, thanks indeed. And kind regards. That's Helen in Galway. Back tomorrow, 1:45. Joe at RTE.ie, 24/7/365. Fergus Sweeney produced, Gar Duffy and sound, Daniel Keating, the BCO, and Ray Darcy next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850-715-815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.